How's everyone doing tonight? This is episode number 26 of the Monster Truck Outlaws of the West podcast, and I am joined with Phil Vicinanza. Phil, how are you doing and where are you at right now?
I am not home. I am coming to you from the East Coast. This is the West Coast podcast, but
you traitor.
Sitting here on the East Coast, what you got?
I said you're a traitor, Phil. How could
Listen, never forget where you came from. Even though we're rocking and rolling here, still got to go home and, you know, hang out and take care of some business whenever you can.
Speaking of the West Coast, why don't you introduce our guest and let's talk about him for a minute.
Oh, of course. So, you know, we always like to have different kind of guests on here. And, you know, we always like to have a good time on here. And from what everyone that has been telling me, especially some of our past guests, our guest here tonight is one of the funniest guys in the business. He's been in the business for a very long time, and he's really a jack of all trades. And a lot of times we kind of prepare questions, but tonight we're just going to kind of see where it goes and see where the stories take us. I call him a jet engine extraordinaire. He's our guest here tonight. It is Rick Corsio.
Rick, welcome to the show. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, Phil. How are you guys doing tonight?
Hey, we're doing good. We're very happy to have you here, and we're excited to get this show on the road.
Oh, I've been anticipating this all day. Did you guys have a good Thanksgiving?
Oh, definitely. We sure did. Yeah, you know, I'm doing back stuffed. Here. Yes, absolutely.
Definitely stuffed. lots of mashed potatoes and turkey.
I think I'm ready.
Well, we always started off with usually the same question, so I'm going to start it off with, you know, how did you get started in the motorsports industry?
It's a simple story. I was born into a situation where my older brother, seemed to want to utilize me for everything he was involved in. From the time we were little kids, he's the first one that helped me underwater. See how long I could hold my breath, and then used to bet our friends I could stand in water longer than anybody else. And as we got older, and I still followed him around, we got into the drag racing parts as kids. We ended up going to the drag races. He ended up getting a job selling the magazines. From that day forward, he was 12, I was 9 years old. From that day forward, we never paid for another drag race ever. And it progressed to the point where eventually we were doing our own shows, promoting drag races. And as the years went by, drag racing kind of went away in the Southland. They shut all the drag strips down. They had all these cars, nowhere to run. So he actually put together a series with these alcohol funny cars where some tractor tires on the backs, weights on the front, talked him into going and pulling sleds and doing mud bogs, the tough tractor pulls, And then monster trucks came into the scene. He figured, well, we had to put on our own shows. And through the course of meeting everybody, we ended up buying a monster truck. We never intended on running it. We intended on just using it for a display, promotional. So we put fire in it. We put smoke in it. It happened to be Bruce Galt's Barbarian. How you doing, Bruce? I hope you're out there. And through a series of misfortunes or luck, we finally started running it over the cars in front of crowds. And the crowd loved it. So that's how I started. From building tracks to running the monster truck, eventually picking up a jet and including that in our program. And that was me. It was me all alone. Taking the jet, the monster truck. We used to do a lot of circle tracks where they would race. I would come out and do a little car crush and then do a car burn. And at one point, we actually had two jets at the same time. Street legal, 86 crew cab dually, that pulled a trailer that had the 57 on it. And I traveled around the country for about 4 or 5 years until the monster truck joined us. And God, where do I stop on this story? To this point, we're still doing the jets, and it's monster truck, and it gives rides, and it's been just such an unbelievable trip. I don't know how much longer I can continue. Waiting to find someone that wants to fill my shoes, but it's been such a trip, Phil. You guys just you've seen us come, you've seen me go down the road, and well, that's why the sport took off. It's just incredible.
No, I bet, and we're going to talk about a lot of those different jet vehicles here tonight. Going back to those drag racing days. What were some of your favorite memories or moments from back in those early days promoting drag racing?
Well, I got to tell you, our deal was selling the programs, eventually setting up a booth, T-shirts, iron-ons. But the most fun I had was watching my brother go up into the grandstands with an arm full of magazines and come down needing more. So it was my job to run the mile and a half to the little shed and get more magazines. And that's been the story of our lives up till now. He would go out there, put it together, and I was the one to get all the legwork. Even nowadays, he puts the show together. I build the track. I run the show. Sometimes I even park cars, whatever needs to be done. He probably mentioned how we were into some rock and roll shows. We even implemented the motorsports part into our concert we did one time, Motley Crue, putting John Force's Funny Car on stage, and all in between. But everything we did was all about fans. It was exhibition, spectacular fire, smoke. Competition, we weren't really all that, didn't care about it. Even doing monster trucks, we concentrate a lot on the freestyle. And you wouldn't believe displays and we were one of the first teams to actually have a good sponsorship way back then. It was a tobacco company, rolling papers and the little packs of tobacco. Top and Job. I don't know if you've ever heard of them. But, I traveled around the country giving away sweatpants, sweatshirts, hats, packages of tobacco. So it was always exciting when I pulled into town. First thing I'd usually do is go to a radio station and just pump the heck out of the show. And I have Steve to thank for all that. That's what he did. Very rarely, he did. He used to go out on the road, too. Which was, it would change my whole perspective because then I got my big brother over my shoulder. But it's been a family deal all this whole adventure. It one way or another, it's been me and Steve against the world. And a lot of times the world overpowered us, but we've had a good time. We've really had a good time. Met a lot of good people.
No, absolutely. And a lot of those good people are in the comments here. I see one of our
funny.
Yeah. We're getting there, buddy. Don't worry. Hey, we got a lot of your supporters and our past guests in the comments. There's Barry Parkin saying, tell Rick he's looking good.
Oh, Barry. Barry, what's up, buddy? I'm glad you tuned in. He's one of the best. You had him on the show.
Yes, another one of our guests. Bruce Cole, he wants to know where his van is.
He what?
He wants to know where his van is, Bruce Gulp.
Well, man, you know what? It's still in use. As I understand it, Jimmy Creighton has it. And the Hillbilly Taxi or...
Redneck Road Trip. I don't
know the name of it, but they're actually using the body that we put on it, the fiberglass Astro van with the windows cut out. And that just goes to show what a good job Bruce did. Same chassis, I think.
Yeah. So when you got Bruce's truck, and if you guys want to hear Bruce's story later on, it's in the archives as well. Why did you choose Bruce's truck?
Because it was a heck of a good deal. He'd been running it, and he broke it. It sat for about a year or so. And like I said, Steve offered him a pretty good, chunk of change. Bruce took it, so we went up there and got it. And that's the truck that we really never intended on running it as per se. It was going to be a promotional piece. And we brought it down here, and we straightened the body up and made it run. Of course, the engine was a 400 small block, Predators and Nitrous. I ran that motor for about 6 years. That just indicates what a good job he did on the motor. But we planned on setting it on street corners or a display to do a fireball every, 4 or 5 seconds, every hour or so, and attract attention, sell some tickets. And that's the van where they finally said, hey, why don't you go ahead and race it? Why don't you, actually take it out there and go do something? I had never driven one before, so that was an experience. The first time I lined up against somebody was San Jose Stadium, I'm pretty sure, for old Dave Matthews in USA. And they were having a hard time deciding who wanted to run next to somebody blowing fireballs, because that was a new item way back then. But they did. They put me up against Jim Cramer and Bigfoot. Three sets of cars, drag race style. And I'll never forget it, because when the light turned green, he took off, and he just, like Bigfoot does, flies over the cars. And I'm wobbling over the first set. He's already over the finish line. Yeah, that's the picture right there. And there's Bruce Gulp standing on the tire. I believe that's him. He was already heading for the pits, got to check the flag and everything. And I'm still fighting over these cars. I turned around at the end of my lane, came back the other way doing the fireballs and smoke. I literally got a standing ovation for getting my butt kicked. And that was the beginning of taking it on the road and actually doing duck walking and donuts. It was real good at doing donuts because of the wheelbase. And the fireballs, people just loved it. It was a propane fire system that we had the Hollywood special effects guy design, and it would blow a 40-foot fireball every 4 seconds until the lines froze up, and that was the end of my show anyway.
Hey, we also have some more people in the comments, including Monster Truck Hall of Famer Mike Welch. Vincent, if you want to pull that one up.
Yeah, Mike's in the comments, and he says, Rick is loved by more people than just about all of us put together.
I tell you what, Mike's the first one we went and ran for. Steve, we really didn't know him too well, but he had his stable of trucks. He had like six or seven of them, and I've never seen anybody take a contained show and bring it on the road with him. We used to do logs and tractor tires. And the very first one I went to was up in Washington, his backyard. I left out of California with a F700 tractor that ran on propane and a farm field trailer, I think it was a Zeeman, and headed for Washington. Now, I had a 50-gallon propane tank. That's what it ran on for fuel. And if you ever tried to find propane after 6 o'clock at night, the trip took me, I think it was 5 days. Well, whereas normally it's about 3 days. And I rolled in there during the show on that Friday night. I was late, a little bit late. We thrashed and got everything all tired up. I went out there. Mike can put on some shows from his Red Baron truck jumping monster airplane to the pig farmer. And I fit right in because of the fire and, you know, it's just what a circus. And Mike, thank you for indoctrinating me, because nobody can say anything that I haven't already heard working for you. So.
Hey, that's what we love to hear. Hey, so when you got the truck, it was called Pure Hell. Why was that?
Pure Hell.
Yeah. Why was that the name?
It was a fuel altered that as kids we idolized. It was the fire burnouts, and it was called Pure Hell. And I thought it would be appropriate that we named the monster truck Pure Hell. We had 5 flames on. Well, you saw the picture. We got one complaint from some little kid's mother that said she didn't like the reference to hell. So that was when we trying to obligate everybody's feelings, correctness, changed the name to Fire Monster. And that's what it stayed until we got rid of it. Well, actually, no. And we changed the name when we made it a ride truck. It became a Monster Patrol. It became a paddy wagon, and I think the lead sled, and then we got rid of it then. But we had it for 7-8 years, and we've made our money back at least twice. Bruce, in case you're still listening.
Oh, I'm sure he is.
Bruce, go ahead. The industry missed out on having somebody like Bruce involved. But when he kind of like gave it up, I know we missed him terribly. Smart guy.
Definitely was awesome having him on the podcast. I think about a month ago. You guys can go rewatch that episode if you want after this. We have some fan questions here. You might know who this is. It's from Jill Curcio. And she says, "Hi, Rick. Tell the story of Nash Bridges and how you crashed into me and the monster truck in the parking lot." This should be a good one.
Go. We were doing a show in Bakersfield, and good old Terry Woodcock, being he's got his connections in the movie industry, they originally asked him, the stunt coordinator, if he wanted to bring his monster truck up and do a couple of scenes for them. He was like tied up or busy, and he called Steve and said, "Steve, would you want to do it?" And the stunt coordinator, on his way back up to Treasure Island, where the Nash Bridges were shot, stopped in Bakersfield, saw the trucks, and we were on our way up to go to Nash Bridges. We took 2 trucks. One was a Ford, one was a Chevy, and the one was a ride truck on one trailer. We went up there, and they re-altered the trucks to look like one truck. We were doing a test jump with the one, and I broke the front end. And it was the one with the four-wheel drive, four-wheel steer. The other truck only had 2-wheel drive, and that was the Chevy. I believe that was a Road Rage at the time. That's what we named it. And we ended up having to make both trucks look similar, so one could jump over the CUDA and the other one could chase them around the parking lot, which is what they had me do. And it was funny though, because the Saturday we were getting ready to go do a shoot, and I wanted to warm up the Chevy. So I took it out there on the tarmac, and I was just, you know, doing some passes back and forth. And Jill had gone and got us some coffee and donuts, and she inadvertently just pulled out there and parked and stopped. I'm coming up right behind her, and the ground was wet, and I locked him up to not hit her, and it just slid. And it ended up kissing the back window of the rental car. And come to find out, they didn't even buy the insurance. But no, it blew out the back window. She escaped with her life. Didn't even spill the coffee. But I remember jumping out of the truck, worried about her. And I saw she was okay. And all I could think of was, did you guys get that on film? Did anybody film that? And they didn't. So, but then we went and practiced for the shot. It was the opening scenes for the episode was, I was a potato farmer from Idaho, and I was trying to collect on $1 million bounty by killing Nash Bridges. I jumped over their car through a closed door and chased them around this parking lot with all these cars they had set up, crushing them. And I got to tell you, I would have had them, but they didn't want me to run them over. So the funniest thing is that after everything was all said and done and we were all loaded up, ready to go, the stunt coordinator says, well, you ready to do that last shot? And we said, what last shot? It's when they come out of the building and they're going to go check out who got killed. And they're supposed to walk around the back of the monster truck. Well, Steve says, well, how about if we just leave a tire there? So what the scene ended up being, they come out of the building and walk around a tire that's just sitting there all by itself. Movie magic. It was funny as hell. And I'll tell you another thing. We had to duct tape the Chevy grill onto the Ford when we had to switch trucks. And but it was so much fun. I envy Terry because he does this stuff all the time. And what a life that is. So, I mean, that was Nash Bridges. It was episode 3, version 9, I believe. It was called Crossfire. And it's a good 45 seconds of me beating up two trucks trying to kill a star. I would have had him, too.
Oh, my.
Sounds like a wild story for sure. We also have Gary Schott in the comments, one of our other former guests. He says, Rick is a very hardworking guy, very devoted to Steve. Great to see you on this. Nice comment from Gary.
Being that we're not high dollar and we're not a corporation, usually when Steve would put together a show, budget was of the utmost importance. I've never seen any promotional company out there with one guy building the track, running the show, cleaning everything up, doing the jet or the monster truck, whatever we were doing, sometimes both of them. And the equipment, you used to give me a skip loader. You go to a monster jam show, and you got one guy that works on 40 feet of area for the whole arena. I got 40 guys, and I'm out there with a skip loader, and a lot of places, they won't even let you dig down, you know. So we're digging up K-rails, and if we can't get cars, we've gone out and told people, you know, what do you got in your backyard we can crush? You know, boats. One place, they gave us a plane with no wings, motorhomes and things like that. But we always made it work because we were real fan-consistent. We did everything to make them happy. That's all I can say about the way that we structured our shows. VIP sections and ticket giveaways. And Gary remembers, I mean, Gary Jr., who drove for his dad, Gary, he used to sit on my lap on the skip loader at times. And he grew up to be a damn fine driver. I remember Kelvin Raymer's daughter. What's her name? She used to come out. She'd be in her go-kart, 9, 10, 11 years old. And I would build her little tiny ramps for her to drive a little monster go-kart over. Look at her now. She's kicking butt. She's kicking all the guys' butts. But, yeah, and we go back a long ways. Gary, his story is this. He's one of the best monster truck builders, drivers, engine men, and he is one of the most helpful, considerate guys out there. Is that good enough, Gary? I hope it is, because it's all true. there was a whole collection of the West Coast guys that go back a long way. Sammy, I can't tell you how many miles I've traveled with Sammy and Ronnie and Travis and Peggy. And one thing about them is you always have breakfast. If you needed dinner, it was always there. Hospitality plus. Sam, the sport's going to miss out on a whole lot of integrity when Sam does retire. No doubt.
Right there with you. Looking at a couple more of our comments here, I saw another follow-up. Oh, here's one from Christopher Allen, our good friend, hey, Monster Trucking with Jim and Chris. Yes, sir. He says, hi, Rick. What's something you came up with that fans may not know about?
Oh, man.
With the band?
Anything.
I'm not sure I know what the question's referring to. It was always patching it with something. If he's talking about any of the repairs I've had to make, shoestring, baling wire, and duct tape. I used to have to put a flare up on the roof for the pilot for the flame. Can he be more specific?
I think he was just mainly asking, you know, something interesting that maybe you did first that nobody else did.
Gee, there's so many. I mean, I used to get told that all the time. What the hell's wrong with you? What are you doing? Did people even want to run with me, competition-wise? So I used to take people with me. I had two seats in it. I can't think what he'd be talking about first.
That's okay. No worries here. Got some more.
I just asked that question, didn't I?
We got a lot of questions here, and I think that's a perfectly correct answer to give there. I had another question here from Sarah Francis. She says, and how he literally blew himself up and survived.
Which time?
Oh my. Is there a more notable time?
Let's talk about all the times.
I ended up toasting the 57, our very first jet car. I had a fuel line rupture, and back then I used to chain up to the cars. And I stayed in the car worried that the chain would break, actually having a rocket with nobody to steer it away from the crowd if it came to that. And I burnt my hands. They were third degree, and I spent some time in the hospital. Then after that, I burnt my legs. We were doing a show for Ed Beckley up in Tennessee, Kingsport, Tennessee. And I was there a couple of days early to fix the transmission. The track owner came down with his kid, and I let his kid help me. And he tightened up the radiator hose, and I was giving the family rides out there, and it got a little bit warm, and it blew the hose off, and I burnt my legs. Now, on that particular deal, I had the jet with me, and they had me in the hospital, and nobody there to run the jet. So what we did was I checked myself out of the hospital, waited in the motel room, and they came down and got me right at showtime. So I went up there and did the driver introduction and then back to the room. And then they came back down and got me, and I went up and did the fire show with the jet. They literally had to pull me out of the car. And because I checked myself out of the one hospital, they wouldn't help me. So I had to go to the next county. And I was in the hospital for about a week on that one. And then there was the time at Hanford we were doing a car stunt where we stand the car straight up and another car drives through at the steel wall. We put gas in the back seat, and right before he comes around to hit the car, we ignite the gas. Well, it was a daytime show, and the fumes had gathered so heavily, it would not ignite. So out of the corner of my eye, I see Steve running toward the car with a road flare. And I thought, now this is going to be funny as hell. I said, Steve, I'll do it. I'll do it. And I used to play ball. I had a pretty good arm then. I took it. I lit the flare. And it was a perfect shot right in the back door. Well, it lit. It lit good. It blew me back about 30 feet. And it burned second degree me on my face. And I was in the hospital a while for that one. The last time was my face again. There was a guy, his name was Randy St. James. He had a little quad, Volkswagen powered, and it was called the Nasty Dragon. And he would come out at 40, 50 miles an hour and just start spinning it with the flames coming out the tailpipe. We were in Bakersfield. It was after the show. I had already cleaned up the track, walking back to the hauler. He was sitting there in his pit area with the Nasty Dragon, and they had the little fire going through the exhaust. I went over there and sit down and have a beer with him. The kid that was sitting on the Nasty Dragon leaned back and hit the button, and it blew me underneath the trailer. Pablo Huffaker happened to be finishing his shower, heading back to his hauler. He was the only one there that was sober enough. And he ended up taking me to the, it took us about an hour and a half to find the hospital in Bakersfield. And I'm sure he probably remembered it because we only found it because we were following these trucks to the taco truck. And it was parked right in front of the hospital. They ended up ambulancing me up to Fresno, where I had gone when we did the steel wall car blow up. So they knew me. They, you know, it was about a year and a half, 2 years later. So unless they know something else I don't know, those are when I blew myself up.
Oh, wow.
Well,
can't play with fire and not get burned.
No, so, I'd imagine.
Little kids, be aware. Your parents are trying to give you some good advice. Don't play with fire.
Don't play with fire.
I think Smokey the Bear said the same thing.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Oh, nothing. We're just talking about Smokey the Bear. You're fine.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. Yeah, so we got another question here. I think you might have answered it in good part here. It's from your brother, Steve. It says, ask Rick when the funny car burned down.
To which one?
The funny car. When the funny car burned down.
Okay, yeah, that was 57.
Yes.
I touched on that.
Yeah.
I was up there in Minnesota, and I've actually got it on tape. I stayed in the car, and the guy that was filming it from the top of the grandstands, he got everything from the window opening up. It didn't have a door, and I went to get out of the. I was sure the jet was winding down, but I had crawled so deep into the car, the steering wheel caught my chest. And it slammed me back into the seat. So then you see the window shut. And about 3 seconds later, it opens again, Lexan, and it looked like it was going to melt. I jump out of the car, and you see my fire suit smoldering. And, burnt to the ground. Absolutely just right to the chassis. So he wasn't real happy about that.
Oh man, I could
loved it though. I mean, after they got done evacuating, they were out in the parking lot, and I got a standing ovation when the ambulance went by. I'm not sure I thought it was worth it either.
No, I can. I bet. So, you know, you drove the monster truck for so much time. What was the decision to get the jet car?
There again, crowd excitement. You know, the fire, the smoke, the burner pops, you know, the afterburner. It used to be like the grand finale. And no matter how good or bad the show was, it used to be that they would leave that arena remembering the jet car. You know, everybody loves to see stuff destroyed. And at that stage of my life, I really liked destroying stuff. So, I mean, it worked out really well. The reason why we, because I burnt it to the ground is one reason, but we ended up doing the fire trucks so we could implement the rides. The fire trucks, large, we've got like 20, 23 seats above the jet, and given rides before the show, and then again an intermission, and then the jet doing the meltdown. There's still four jets out there that we built. And the one we've got now, Fire Chief, of course, it was Jack Burna who put the big tires on for the first fire truck. And it was called Raging Inferno. Isn't that a coincidence? Just happened to be the name we called it. But we had a great time with that. It was the Given Rides is where it's at. I took the monster truck, the van, and we used to go set up at Walmart parking lots and start on a Wednesday in the town we're doing the show at. And I would give rides from 9 o'clock in the morning until 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock at night. And, you know, it was amazing because, well, first of all, that's seat time. I've probably got anybody that gives rides is the driver you want to hire to drive a race truck, because they're the ones with all the seat time. Negotiating the parking lot, cars, trees, whatever you have, they'll get roped off the section. But, oh, I used to get some pretty good rides, man. That was fun. That was fun.
Got a lot of comments in here. We got one from Mike Minner, and he says, what does Rick think about the mini monsters?
You know what? They're great. I love them. I wish they had them when I was a kid. They're good show filler. I know that Lee wants to go ahead and put his own series together, and that would be great. It's going to attract a little bit different of an audience, but you know, we have them every chance we can. And Lee's great, and the kids that are driving them, well, guess what? They're going to be driving the big ones come, you know, soon enough. And the technology behind them is incredible. They're not just go-karts. There's some pretty high-tech innovation marvels, mechanical marvels.
Got another one here from Dave Gross, and he says, hey, Rick, what about those tanks on the way to Roswell? What about those tanks?
I can barely hear them.
Dave said, what about those tanks on the way to Roswell?
Is that Dave? I'd rather tell some other stories, Dave. Like the time we were at Santa Maria, because he's our announcer. And one of the best. We used to coordinate. It's where I'm doing the jet. And he's like, what do you want to hear? And they say, air. And I hit the burner and bring it up. He was racing a tough truck off the line in Santa Maria. And so he's running along, and his legs ran out from underneath him, and he face planted. And I've never heard an audience clapping so loud. But we've gone to Roswell a bunch of times. I'm not sure I know what he's talking about because I didn't hear actually what it referred to. But Dave is one of the best. He's not only a humanitarian, he's funny. And we didn't like each other when we first met. I think we were kind of like jealous of each other. He had long hair, but he had short hair. Not used to seeing that. Long hair and short hair, much like, I guess, Joe Dirt. And so, but anyway, he was the announcer, and he can pump a crowd up. He's awesome. As a matter of fact, he's got an old monster truck driver working for him, a guy named Gino Canal. You're out there, Gino. What's up, buddy? He ended up going to work for Jimmy Creighton, and he was driving Monster Patrol along with Dave Woodcock, who was driving the Barefoot. And Jimmy had taken over the West Coast with him. And Gino turned out to be one of the best damn drivers I've ever seen. He put that thing on the front wheel and bobble it way before they were doing what they're doing nowadays. Gino meant to do it. He ended up meeting the love of his life, got married. He's got three beautiful kids now. He's working for Dave. So, and there's another story I'd like to say about Dave. Here in Victorville, we were doing a show, and Swanson's were there, Rick and Eric. And I guess they worked it out to where Dave was going to jump behind the seat and, like, you know, motor it out in front of the grandstands. I don't know what came over him. Dave comes blasting out, going over the cars. Rick's hot on his tail. And he gave the crowd quite a show there. And then he assumed the microphone and went back to announcing like nothing happened. And he did good. He should have been a driver, Dave. But he's one of the best.
Hey, from one announcer to another, we have a comment here from Tim Chapman saying, "Raging Rick, what a great personality."
Chappy, first of all, glad you're doing good, buddy. Yeah, he's another one that can just get him on their feet. And he's got that mind where he remembers everything about everybody. So he gives the rundown. He's run 27, been driving all these years, and he's run this truck and that truck. And Chappy's awesome. He also announces for other venues and other motorsport events, from go-karts and the mini outlaws to stock car tracks. And looking forward to getting back at it, Chappy, so we can go out and have some fun again.
Got another comment here from Rick Yance, and he says, "Remember the time in Indio, California, you took me to get fuel for the jet and the dually, and you kind of forgot to mention to me that the dually had no brakes. Was fun using that curb to slow down."
I usually have a little warning list on the dashboard in case anybody just jumps in to any of our trucks. And I guess it fell on the floorboard. But, yeah, we're lucky he made it back. Indio has been a place that we've done a lot of shows there. We've had a lot of exciting things happen. A lot of the different type of shows. For example, we were doing a demolition derby where one of the sponsors of the demolition derby sent his boy out there and got drunk before the show, unbeknownst to anybody, and ended up driving off the arena fairgrounds out into the city, chased them, the cops. It was about a 9-mile high-speed demolition derby car cop chase. We didn't miss a beat. We just kept running. But yeah, we read about it the next morning. So you never know what you're going to expect when you enter into one of our shows.
Got another comment here from Barry Parkin. He says, "I witnessed this firsthand, standing on a bare track with Rick, brainstorming on what we can use for jumps and where we can beg, borrow, or steal a skip loader. Then Steve would call Rick asking, why isn't the track built?"
Yeah, he's right. First thing I would do is eyeball the track, see what they've got available. Barry will remember we were cleaning up a track one time, and I was on it was a forklift, fork on it, and I lifted up one of the K-rails. Now, they're 20 feet wide, and I wanted to groom the track, clean, you know, knock all the jumps and stuff down. As I'm pushing the K-rail across the track, grooming the track, he's dragging the cars off. And Barry's the innovative one. He's the one that built that lawnmower, snow blower, chainsaw, cook's omelets, the whole nine yards. We had him come work on some of our stuff, and I remember him saying, you got a wrench? And I said, no. Well, why do you need a wrench? And he goes, twist that nut. I said, well, a pair of pliers, that won't work. And I was just going on Steve's budget, you know. But now Barry, the Western Renegade, I mean, you know, need I say more?
You got that right. And make sure everybody that's tuning in right now, make sure you're liking and sharing this video so everybody can jump in here and hang out with us as we trade stories back and forth with the one and only Rick Corsio. You know, Rick, keep scrolling through the comments here. There's a lot of great people jumping in. Where are we at here on the comments? I saw another one from Barry. He asks, please ask Rick if he could drive any monster truck. What truck would it be and why?
That's a good question.
I know that I drove for Terry. He had two trucks running for us, and he lost his driver. His brother never showed up, and it was called Dangerous Toy. And but to this day, I beat him fair and square. And he said, "No, I won. I got paid for two trucks that night." But the monster truck we had was basically the display, the rodeo clown doing donuts in the fire and smoke. But if I was to jump into a truck, it would be taking Dennis up on his offer years ago, or Jimmy possibly, Creighton. It'd be one of Jimmy's trucks, most likely, yeah. Probably Iron Outlaw.
That's a pretty good
Jimmy's
answer.
Jimmy's got a habit of building the best of the best, using the best, and his trucks do the best. They always have. He came ran for us when Bounty Hunter was a yellow pickup. And him and Dawn weren't even married yet, I don't think. And Dawn, she's incredible. She's one of the nicest people you'll ever meet. And she, yeah, very, very, very attractive. It's a small industry when you think about it. Everybody intertwines at one point or another. And the stories, they make themselves. It's just a matter of if you got a good attitude, if you want to have a good time, you know, safe and sane, the people are there and they help. It's unlike NASCAR, NHRA, because everybody helps everybody. Even in the early days, one story I remember in particular, Jesse Burton, the gentle giant, he's gone now and he's much missed. But I blew a tire. I sidewalled it, and I didn't think I was going to be able to go back out. And he had all his crew guys donate their T-shirts, and he bundled them all up. He stuffed them in the hole and put some elephant, we used to call it elephant snot. It's a tire sealer. And it held air for me to go out there and do my last pass. And, it's things like that you remember. And you had to get past being scared of them first, though. And it's just, we were grassroots. We were a brand new entity. Sponsors were just coming on board. TV was far and few in between. But going down the road, it always attracted so much attention that you could not sneak in anywhere. They roll out the red carpet for you, and cops would close down the intersections, and it really made a normal guy feel very important. And for that, I'm very grateful, because it's one of those things that will never, ever happen again, in my opinion. And the ones that were the innovators, you've had them on your show, and I've had the pleasure of working with them and running with them and making fun of them. And I think there's hope that they're going to cut me some slack on these questions. Come on, give me another one.
All right, what do we got next? Oh, we have ourselves the California Quakes in the comments. Let Rick know Hot Rod Eller is here.
Oh, that's it. What's happening, Eric? Yeah, we brought him on board to drive our new truck. It's unfortunate that this virus has, shut everybody down. And he was in the beginning stages of getting used to the truck. He had some changes that needs to be made to fit his style of driving. One thing I'll tell you is when he does get behind the wheel, he's going to tear it up. And I mean, make a name for himself. Eric's one of the best. And he used to drive a truck. It was like an old school truck. It was called California Quake. And after that deal fell through, we scooped him up, and a hell of a mechanic, hell of a good guy. Got to call me, Eric.
We have another one here from one of our another former guests, David Tucker. Hi, Rick.
Hey,
just
David,
jumped
how
in.
How you doing?
He says, how about losing your will in the middle of the intersection at Banks, Oregon show in the fire truck under the bus there?
He's the one that put the hydraulic leveling system on it. Four independent rams on each corner so that I didn't have to use a jack. We pull in after the night was over or when we got there to tire up or tire down. I just fire up the little pony motor there and hit the hydraulic handles and right up in the air. And he had them. They were so sensitive. I could actually make the fire truck dance using the hydraulic rams. And I could take the tires off in half hour, load it on the trailer in 45 minutes. And he's run our shows, and his T-Max, it's unique in itself. You've had him on your show, you've seen him. He's one of the best machinists I've ever met. And with our stuff, I met a lot of machinists. It was something we always were looking for. He builds most of his own parts, and I know that he's been making them available to some of the other racers that want to use quality, homemade, perfect parts that last. Dave, I love you, buddy. I wish we could lift this pandemic thing and get back out there.
We have another one here from Jason Rivas, and he says, Rick will always have a place in our hearts. He treated me and my family with such respect every time.
That's my little brother right there. I've known Jason since he was 10 years old. He'd show up out there with his mom and dad. Opal, she was his mother. She was a driver. And his dad was the mechanic. And to see what Jason's turned into is really breathtaking. He is probably the best historian on any monster truck, tough truck, mud bogger. He's a heck of an announcer. We've had him announce our shows. But yeah, there's one of those history-laden situations where I watched him grow up into the fine guy he is now. Love you, buddy. We've had a lot of good times, Jason.
Got another one here from your brother again. It's Steve, and he says, ask Rick about the time he was selling admission tickets in Carlsbad Raceway out on the highway, fox hunting with John Force. How much did he pocket that night?
That was about $700. I can tell them that I don't give a damn. The cops came up. We were doing a Wednesday night fox hunt. Chicks got in for free. And Palomar Airport Road from Carlsbad's Raceway is about 6 miles down to Highway 5, which is the main freeway down there. And the cars were bumper to bumper as far as you could see. And the Highway Patrol came up and said, y'all don't have a permit for this kind of a conjunction. Everybody that don't have tickets has got to go home. So we made sure that we could get tickets to them parked on the street out there so they wouldn't have to turn them around. And they thought I was scalping tickets. I wasn't. He got most of the money. But I had a cast on my arm from a previous little fall or scuffle, and I was using it as my money pouch. And driving out of there, I forgot that I had a bunch of money in there. So, but it balanced the fact that he didn't pay me very well. So it worked out really well.
Another.
I'm sure glad Steve's not here, you know, like coaching me or anything.
Oh, man.
I can say what I want.
That'd be a little hectic, but we got Lee Plato. You mentioned him earlier. He says, Dave is amazing. He has helped us huge with the Skull Crusher.
Yeah, he loves bringing the little guys out too, you know, and he knows that there's a future for them. They're mini monsters. They're such close replicas that we love having them. You know, it's just when the crowd is paying to see monster trucks, and they have tough trucks or Mike Logan as a, you know, as a show filler, predominantly the monster trucks are going to take front and center stage. But the monster trucks, the little mini monster trucks, the kids love them. They come out and see them in the pits, and oh my God, they're incredible. And Lee, you've done a great job with everything. You really have.
Barry Parkins also in the comments. He wants to know, ask Rick what fast food restaurant he would use to bait me and get me to work harder.
You broke up. Say that again, Vince.
He said, ask Rick what fast food restaurant he would use to bait me and get me to work harder.
I just got done eating one, Barry. I'm sorry. In-N-Out. See, they don't have In-N-Out in Canada. And when he was down here, I surprised him when we ran through one, and he just couldn't believe how good it was. So, yeah, Canada's got In-N-Out's number one fan up there. I tease him every once in a while. I'll send him a picture of me eating a double-double, and I know he's up there drooling. But if that's the scariest question you got for me, Barry, thank you.
I had a gut feeling it was going to be In-N-Out. I'm not surprised.
Yeah. We take it for granted down here. The families are race oriented too. They love racing.
Rick, if you think we're asking you curveballs, we'll make sure everybody listening right now will get to the juicy questions. Don't worry. Okay. We'll make a count. But actually, I have another question. You know, you've been a lot of places with all sorts of different vehicles. Do you have a favorite venue or racetrack that you've been to?
I would have to say Victorville. It's our home track. I'm able to accommodate a lot of the businesses in the local area that have helped out. And we can VIP them and make them feel special. Because they are. Anytime you get any help on any vehicle, it's doubly appreciated. But if it wasn't Victorville, I would have to say maybe down in Florida, we were doing shows for a guy named Tom Bogus, Indoor Motorsports. And we went on a tour with them. We had Boss Gator and Gunslinger, when it was Gunslinger, not Slinger, Carolina Crusher, and Dennis and Gravedigger, and those were the early years. And I would say that the venue down there in Fort Myers, it was super nice, super great people, accommodating, hospitality plus. Packed the house all three nights. It was great. It was great.
Well, it's that time of hour. It's time for Explain That Photo.
Okay, here we go.
Like you said, here we go. We're going to start it off with our first picture.
That would be the weekend of the very first time it went over the cars. It was San Jose Stadium. Bruce was with us. And I had not driven it more than on and off the trailer at each individual shop where it was getting either something done with the suspension or the body. And that was when I raced Bigfoot. And collectively got my butt handed to me. The fire suit was part of the van deal. You can tell it's for a very tall person. So I had it all cuffed up underneath me. It was the very first time I'd ever signed autographs. And I'll tell you what, I was hooked. We had Dennis at that show too. And they had me right next to him. So I got his overflow, thinking they were there to see me. They were just standing in line waiting to see Dennis. Taught me a valuable lesson, park on the other side, but it was great. It's where the bug bit me. I would have changed a thing. I loved it.
Phil, you got the next photo for us?
Pull it up.
Okay, that's that was in Missouri. And that's when, after we put the new body on it, which became the Fire Monster. And that was a lot of fun up there. That was right before I ended up taking it up to Great Lakes for a show with Broadway Bob. And there again, I blew all these people away because they weren't expecting anything that shot fire out of it on purpose. And great people. It was a great time. I can barely see the picture there. It was a some girls I'd met, and they came with me. I was single, and that's where I broke the front end. Okay, 5-ton Rockwells. They're not like the front ends that they use today. And if I did get any substantial air, that was usually the result. So I probably didn't leave out of there until Tuesday of that for next week.
This next picture was sent in by Rick Yance, and he wants you to explain this photo.
Okay, I can barely see it. I see fire coming out. That would be, am I looking at the 57?
Yes, he said it's taken in El Centro.
El Centro. Okay. There it is. Yeah, well, that's the 37. When we messed up the 57, we were able to salvage the chassis. And after some heavy alterations to accommodate the 37 Chevy body on it, we went back out there. We had the crew cab dually. We took the engine from it, put it in this frame, and it was called Blast from the Past. Two, and that was like the third time I think I'd ever lit it, and it was a great car. I loved it. I didn't burn this one to the ground, so we ended up selling it to a guy named Charlie Brown, who never really figured out how to run it. So, but yeah, that was one of the most fun I've ever had in a jet. It was running. So I used to do hot laps around the racetrack. I'd start it up and then I'd let it roll. And then I'd go ahead and take it up to about 65% and launch it on a circle track. Usually they were watering the track. So I used to get it sideways all the time. And then I'd go back and get the other jet and come out and do another burn or the monster truck. It was usually a two vehicle deal. And unbelievable fun. The innovations. Yes. The ideas Steve would come up with, he'd always start. I knew I was in big trouble when he'd start off his sentence with, but can we just? And I knew that whatever followed was going to be a dream or a nightmare. But can we just? And we used to make it fit, get a bigger hammer, three more guys, a couple of cheeseburgers, and that's all we needed.
Well, Rick, we have three more photos for you to explain. Phil, you want to bring that one up?
Bring it up.
We were shooting a reality show, or, you know, the possibility of one. You can see Dave in the picture with us, and there's Steve and the cameraman. And the premise of the show was a family of motorsport promoters and drivers. And the problems they face getting to the show, because they wanted us to fight. So they would pit us against each other, which they didn't need to do with me and Steve. I mean, that's just our relationship, a couple of cats and dogs. And this was the culmination of the week-long pressure of trying to find out why the jet wouldn't start. Well, we got it to start, and we put on the show, and it was a complete knockout success. And that's when I pulled up after the burn, and the TV guys came over, and they were shooting us, and Dave saying, great job. That was pretty bitching. They almost sold the pilot, I guess, but we just really didn't want to do that to that extent. We'd have to give up some of what we normally do. And we ended up killing each other anyway. So, but it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. Dave Gross, he's the announcer, and he made it exciting. He did.
Got another photo coming right at you.
That'd be my wife. I'm sitting on my little mini bike, I believe. And we actually met in high school. I guess she remembers. I tried to get her to cut school with us. My brother had a band, and we were known to take a day off here and there and go to the beach or go to the mountains, snow, whatever season it was. And she was one of the little chickies by the fence, and she says, I looked at her and went like that with my hair and said, hey, you want to go to the beach? And she was scared to death of my brother because she used to have to go get him out of class to take him to the principal's office for, guess what, cutting school. So we passed on that opportunity. 45 years later, we ran into each other again via Facebook. I invited her to come to a show. She came. She's been with me ever since, about 10 years ago. Best help I've ever had.
Got one more picture for you.
Oh, boy. Let's see. I was signing autographs. I don't remember where, but we had the kitty trucks there. It was, what's his name? Oh, gosh. Prowler. And well, that's his driver sitting right next to me, signing autographs. I generally would be out giving rides during the pit party or the autograph session after the show. So it was rare that I got to sit at the table and sign autographs. And it was a mind-blowing experience when we had all the drivers sitting at the table, because they're talking about how they raced each other and they would have won if this hadn't happened. And I'm just going, you know, the ride truck's out there idling. Steve's going to kill me for passing on these rides. And so I didn't get to sit very many autograph sessions.
Well, Phil, we have someone in the comments. Seemed like all of our past guests are coming to watch Rick tonight. I'll let you read this one.
I want to thank everybody. If you did, I put the word out. Be nice to see some people show up and shoot them at me. I'll try to sort them and answer them as best I can.
Well, this is quite the story here. It's from Rod Wood, and this is what Rod had to say.
Oh my gosh!
He's coming.
I seen him do the most fantastic front flip I've ever seen anybody do, and drive it off to come back out, finish the show, drive it off the track. His wife has the a video of it. Karen also got the most fantastic shot of the jet, a head-on shot right when I hit the burner, and the sparks just rooster tailed into the air. And Karen, I hope you don't mind, but we use that for a lot of our promo shots. It's one of the best shots anybody's ever gotten of the fire truck. But what was the question Rod wanted to know?
Oh, of course. Yeah. Well, it's a good story here. He says, I remember doing a show in Flagstaff, Arizona with Rick about 5 or 6 years ago. My wife and I needed to go to the store, so Rick offered to take us so he can get jet fuel for the fire truck. We loaded up in the fire truck and went to the town's Chevron station and then for Del Taco takeout. This was the best jet ride we ever had, and the looks on everyone's faces in traffic were priceless. The interstate was a little intense.
I'm pretty sure he's talking about the time we took the fire truck. It was street legal before we put the big tires, we might have had the big tires on it, but we used to drive the fire truck from show to show when it was in the stock condition. We had three of them before we put the big tires on it. But if that's what I'm talking about, yeah, I used to drive it into town all the time. And, people would trip. And Rod tripped because I put the lights on, which I'm not supposed to do. But yeah, we went to Del Taco, and he said he'd never remember it. I mean, never forget it. Well, he did. I guess he remembered.
Oh, I bet. You know, we got a lot of great people here. Oh, got another follow-up comment from Gary Schott. He says, I remember that TV shoot running that monster truck with no prep.
Yeah, Gary remembers. It was, yeah, like I said, that night was the culmination. And we were I think we were burning batteries up or something. It was the solenoids. But we got it straightened out, and it was a classic Cinderella story. Pulling up to the announcer stand right after the car burn, with everybody screaming and yelling. And you know, it was really a good night. Of course, Gary remembers many nights because Gary ran with us so often. The running joke with Gary was, he was always the first to get loaded. We couldn't figure out why. He never broke anything, put on a good show. He was always the first one to get loaded. And we'd have to dig him out of the buffet, whatever buffet was in town. Huh, Gary? Yeah, Gary, I remember when Gary was skinny. So, you know, that's how long I've known him.
Oh, boy. Another follow-up comment from Bruce Galt. He says, I think that was my fire suit you're wearing, my brother from another mother.
Didn't I tell you the white suit? He gave that to me with the helmet, and neither one of them fit me very well. I never really thought I'd be jumping out of the truck for any reason. So, well, I was able to get a fire suit later on from Deese, and it was embroidered black with the flames and all that, which actually saved my life when I burned up the jet. But you know, that fire suit was much appreciated, much needed, and it made me realize I need to get one that fits me. So thank you, Bruce.
And we got a comment here from Gary Schott. He only said two words. He said, trailer queen.
Oh, Steve used to joke and say, oh, yeah, I got reports that you were going down the highway and you had chicks hanging out the windows and yee-haw. And it was so far from the truth. I was the first one at the track and the last one to leave because I had to build the track and then I had to clean everything up. So there's so much that's thought that I was enjoying that I wasn't, I mean, not in the early days anyway. I learned the ins and outs of making them all fit together. So.
Oh, I bet. So we mentioned him a couple times here tonight. It's our friend Terry Woodcock. Now, I'm sure Terry's going to catch the replay if he's not in here already, but I'd like to ask you, do you have a good Terry Woodcock story to share?
First time I ever met him. Went to go run for old Mike Welch, and I did not know that we needed a kill radio. I had one somewhere in the glove compartment, but it wasn't hooked up to the van, and they weren't going to let me run without hooking it up, even though I think I was just doing the fire show, just go out there by myself and do some donuts and fire. Well, Terry was pitted next to me, and I went over and I said, do you know anything about these things? And he kind of like looked at me and said, you know, get with me, kid. Don't bother me. And I said, no, I got the monster truck behind you. And, you know, maybe if you get a chance, you could help me wire it in. And he took it from me. 10 minutes later, he said, this is how you turn it on. He saved my life. And I would do anything for Terry, anytime, any day, anywhere. Him and his brothers, Dave and Danny, their family. You know, it's just, I remember when his hair was long. Well, wait a minute, it still is. The Bakersfield boys are incredible.
So we mentioned some Terry stories. He's also in the comments. It's Gary Schott. Do you have any Gary Schott stories?
Yeah, we'll see. Let's go back to San Bernardino. Gary, how about when we were doing that show and it was we were going to do the tractor pulls with it, Had you? I think Bruce was there too. Right after National Anthem, they were back in the sled up. It had its own motor, and the motor broke. And we had all these truck and tractor pullers that could not pull a sled because the sled was broke. And we had a little bit of a riot going on. And no, I think it was even on the news that night. One of the exciting nights that I'm sure Gary remembers. I'm sure he's going to ask me about Pahrump next. But you have to lift up a couple of rocks to pull these stories out. Really choice, juicy ones.
Well, this might bring a story to it. Steve wants to know, ask Rick the time you went to the wrong state for a show with Rev.
Oh, good Lord. I was in Kingsport, Tennessee. And the next show was supposed to be in Martinsville, West Virginia. And it was after I burnt my legs. So we had my uncle from back east come down. He was going to help me drive the truck. So I had my nurse's daughter, long story, that's a whole different story. She was with me and her girlfriend and her boyfriend who needed to leave town. So I had this whole crew coming with me. And at the time, we didn't want to go over the weigh station. Just didn't, scales, if we could avoid them, we would. So we decided to go over the Great Smoky Mountains instead. And about a third of the way up, it turned into a real narrow two-laner. And my uncle smoked the motor, blew the motor up in a hairpin turn, effectively shutting down the entire highway. And we ended up calling Steve from this little diner up the road a bit. And he said, well, where are you? Maybe I can have one of the other guys drop their trailer and go get you. And I told him, and he says, you're not even on my map. Where the hell are you? And I told him, I said, we're on our way to Martinsville, West Virginia. He says, no, man, it's New Martinsville, Virginia. And we were about 300-400 miles away from that, so we didn't make the show. But the funny thing is, there was a guy sitting in the diner, old guy with a little stubby cigar. He turned out to be one of the nation's premier tree movers. And he ultimately had his big wrecker go down and get my tractor trailer out of harm's way. He had a yard that was as big as Fantasia, right through a clearing of trees. And he put a motor in for us in trade for doing a car burn at his annual workers' picnic, and that was a dream come true. That was another ultimate story that I have a hard time believing it. We were there for about 3 weeks and didn't miss a show while he rebuilt our truck, and great memories.
This is a two-part comment. It's from Eric Eller. He says, you are the master of loading monster tires. And he also says, at show in North Dakota, the other guys had one of the ex-Bigfoot drivers, was amazed at how we loaded the tires.
Well, yeah, I mean, a lot of the guys have that high-tech, hydraulics. And I've always been very simplistic in trying to, keep the cost of the operation down. It's real simple. You just a little bit of technology with innovation and the need to get it done. I used to just lean the tires on the trailer and throw a strap across the trailer and pull them on with a car or a truck or whoever was driving by. And they would flip the tires right up under the trailer, no problem. It was a lot easier than folding down the arms and the hydraulics and all that. Of course, they're nice, but yeah, there was necessity is the mother of invention. So I barely even had ramps to load the monster trucks most of the times. Yeah, hey, you off the side.
No, hey, I got you, Rick. So you've always driven jet vehicles. Why was the jet engine your bread and butter?
I asked Steve that 1,000 times. I said, first of all, it's true. Kids love fire trucks. Kids love firemen. And, you know, it's just, it's big and it's very visible and it's easy to attract attention. It's long enough to accommodate a jet engine. There's plenty of space for seating. They're relatively cheap if you buy them in a salvage yard or a recovery yard where they'll rebuild them and send them to small airports or whatever. And they just fit the bill so perfectly. We ended up buying 4 of them over the course of 15, 20 years. Never had problems, trading them off or, you know, selling them. And 3 of them are still out there running. So fire trucks, you know, they're unique in the aspect that you can utilize them in so many different fashions. Giving rides, doing the car burn, driving around town if you want, parades. I love them. I mean, it spoiled the heck out of me because I'd be inside the cab, short of the one we've got now. It's a convertible, which is really uncomfortable in the summertime. But now I'm driving around with the air conditioner, the radio on. I got my ice chest right there. Just air shocks, nice suspension. So that's why we get the fire trucks.
Well, I'll tell you, Steve's pulling stories out of his hat. He just said,
That's why I'm raging Rick.
Yeah. He says, the time Rick got 2 different tickets at 2 different scales and one night cost me
$1,500. You talking about weigh stations?
Yes.
Yeah.
Says you got ticketed 2 times.
We kind of jumped into that boat unknowing what it entailed. We weren't truckers. We weren't used to the weigh station way of thinking, like permits and CA numbers and all that stuff. So I'm heading down to Florida, and I bought my permits in every state, and I figured I'd do the same thing in Florida. Well, unfortunately, the route we took, you go over this long bridge, and the weigh station has at the end of the bridge before you get into the state, and you have to have it before you go into the state. So I pulled into the weigh station, and they red-lighted me. I had to go in, and they informed me that because I was already in the state without a permit, that they were going to impound me. So I called Steve, and I was trying to explain that to him. And Steve's a different animal on the phone. When you're not face-to-face with him, his efficacy is less than to be desired. So I'm sitting there with this state trooper with his 10-gallon hat and his boots and his big old belt buckle and his Southern drawl. And I can hear Steve going, well, we didn't know we needed permits. We were going to buy them. As soon as we got there, he said, well, if we'd have known you was coming, we'd have called you and told you. And I could see he was getting madder and madder. And I'm sitting there going, Steve, don't make this guy mad. They're going to lock me up. And they did. So until Steve could send the money for the, I think it was $800 to buy the permits. So, and then they took me across the street to cash the cashier's check in Jailhouse Blues. So, yeah, it was pretty humiliating, to say the least. And Steve was none the wiser because he's 3,000 miles away laughing his ass off. That was just one way station story. Way station became an enigma for me. I actually used to have heart palpitations if I saw a way station sign. But we are a registered motorhome now. It does not require us stopping at way stations. I will every once in a while just as to be cordial. And sometimes they'll just pull me in there and just want to look at it. But for anybody out there that's got a toter home, they know exactly what I'm talking about. But it's all the comfort in the world you can imagine. Having a house on wheels to go do these shows, it's essential. Got to have a bathroom. That's just... it's a necessity.
You know, Rick, I have to ask you, do you ever have difficult moments working with family?
Yeah, every weekend. From the time we were kids. I still remember him holding me underwater, betting his friends I could stay underwater longer than anybody because he was holding me under. And no, we love each other. I was his best man at his wedding. Okay, I mean, I've known my brother for a long time, obviously. he's one in a million, and I just thank God that they gave me him as an older brother. If I was able to come back, I would want to be his older brother for one go round. But he turned me on to things that I never would have done, never would have seen in a million years. And it's representative in the fact that my dad sat us down one time and said, y'all got just each other. And blood is thicker than water. Take care of each other. He wasn't listening, of course. But I did. I listened, and that's why I've been with him all these years. It's been a while. Been a long while. But yeah, no, we've been known to have words. Usually with him, it's in front of a grandstand where they get a good show. But it's been a fair trade-off because he's my brother, and he has this knack for talking you out of your money. And making you think you're glad you gave it to him. And I've learned a lot from him. I've learned a lot from people that he's dealt with. I used to have to deny I was his brother, actually. I'd go out there, you know, just call me Rick. I'm not, don't forget that. I'm only a poor show at Christmas time. But, and I usually get a pretty good Christmas gift. And the other side of the coin is he knows that when he sends me out there, I'm going to do my absolute best to have the best time I can have, you know, and run his stuff also. But it's been so much fun, Phil. You just have no clue. From the John Force stories to the rock and roll and everybody I've met along the way, there's going to come a time when I have to give this up, which was about 2 weeks ago. And I'm going to miss it terribly, you know. The show must go on.
The show must go on, Rick, I tell you. And, you know, as we slowly start to wind down here tonight, I do have a couple more questions. And
I was just getting wound up.
You're just getting wound up. Oh, boy. Well, you never know when your phone might ring, Rick. I'll tell you that. But, you know, your brother's asked a lot of questions here tonight, and you've told a lot of stories on his behalf. So now I'm going to turn the tables now. Do you have a good story to tell about your brother, Steve?
Oh, I've got a few. Let's see. I'm going to have to go with the time. It was a drag race, though. Is that okay? I know it's Monster Truck.
Go ahead. Absolutely.
We were doing a drag race, and we had Monster Trucks with us. But we also had the Wednesday Night Fox Hunt theme, where the crowd was full of women. And we had a beer truck, a beer trailer out in the concession area. And we were going to have a wet t-shirt contest. I can't remember whose idea that was. But right in the middle of the wet t-shirt contest, the guys that were in the grandstand wanted to get a closer look. Unfortunately, there was a fence in between them. And they didn't care about the fence. So they all surged forward. And the girls started running, and the guys were chasing them. They knocked over the beer trailer, but believe the helicopter showed up about 10 minutes later. And I can't remember if the cops were directing traffic out of the arena or trying to get everybody to stay in the arena to arrest everybody. But it was one of those, I remember vividly, Steve in his motorhome looking over the fence, pulling his hair out, what little gray hair he had. And he says, Rick, what are we going to do? And I looked at him and I said, what do you mean we? I got in my car and I drove out. That's just one of them. Everybody that we talked to tonight, they can tell you one of their own. doing these shows, dealing with people, it does not go without an adventure. And it's been one hell of a ride.
Oh, I bet. Say, Rick, if you weren't playing with monster trucks or being in motorsports, what would you be doing?
Well, actually, I did it. For 31 years, while we were doing the monster truck shows, I ran heavy equipment. I was an operator for a Local 12, Operating Engineers Los Angeles, and I would take a 60-foot-long scraper, twin engine, and go up on top of a hill and make that hill level with the ground. And I did it for 31 years, and it was more excitement than you can imagine. If you could put grandstands on a job site, you'd get just as much excitement. Bailing off a hill, 60 miles an hour, 20 tons of dirt rooster tailing, no brakes, 12-cylinder in the front and 8-cylinder in the back, and doing that for 10 hours a day, and then know that that weekend you got to go drive monster trucks. It's breathtakingly exciting. It takes its toll on the body after a while, but anybody out there that runs heavy equipment, you know, monster trucks are distant cousins with the heavy equipment, rear ends and all that stuff. But that's what I would have done if I didn't do this, but I was able to do it anyway.
Vincent, you have any more questions there?
Yes, I do. And I want to know, what advice do you have for, you know, up-and-comers wanting to get involved, wanting to get their foot in the door in the monster truck industry?
Call me. You can run my jet right now. It takes a certain breed. You have to have determination. You have to have concentration, a smidgen of imagination, and a little bit of mechanical ability. But getting in the door... and I've heard everybody say that. You need to know somebody. You can go to a monster truck school, but you can also go to secretarial school. Until you find the job that's going to hire you, you've just spun your wheels. But there's enough teams out there that appreciate the help. Derek Perez, he's one of your examples. He would just come around, hang around, and then end up helping. And you'd remember him, and you would find a slot for him. And now he's been driving monster trucks for all kinds of teams. But it takes a little bit of initiative. If it's really what they want to do, they have to pursue it with the gusto of somebody that is going to just do it and do it right. Otherwise, just go watch from the grandstands, because then you're just a pain in the butt.
When it comes time for you to step away from the business, what are you going to miss most?
Probably for trying to have a good time and to show people a good time, make them think that they got their money's worth, and that anybody I was around during this time that I was able to make them laugh or smile, or, you know, there's the old adage, love me, hate me, at least you'll remember. So I think my legacy would be that he was a good guy to be around.
So, you know, you've come.
Yeah, you got that right. Yeah, he ran off there. Got to ask Rick, I'll probably make this my last question here tonight. What's been your favorite memory in the business?
I'm going to have to say Motley Crue.
Yeah.
It was a Motley Crue show, yeah. It was like a whole different world. And like Steve said a while back, it wasn't really for us. We should have been there. They offered him the management position, and he rightfully declined it because of the element. But the crowd, we sold it out. The funny cars on stage, which was a new idea and fresh and different. And then hearing they got signed a week later, and then watching them for 15 years being the gods of heavy metal, that I would have to say setting that up, getting the car set up, the promotional aspect of promoting it, That's one of my favorite memories. It absolutely is.
And, you know, you've made a whole career making memories. And, you know, that's really your legacy. And a lot of people wanted me to have you on here so you could tell the stories from way back when.
I don't disappoint anybody. When you're put on the spot and all of a sudden, you could be sitting here drooling, thinking about what you're going to say, but never say it. I just hope I didn't disappoint anybody.
No way. We didn't disappoint us.
No.
What you guys are doing, it's really awesome.
Well, we appreciate it, Rick. Yeah, we appreciate it. And I know you've been you've probably listened to every episode thus far. So we're very honored to have you on here, the podcast. And I don't think this is going to be the last time we hear from you. We'll figure something out for the future.
We'll definitely figure something out.
Yeah. Well, Rick, it's been a pleasure, sir. Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for coming on here, and we'll definitely talk soon.
Thank you, Rick.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. You guys all have a good night.
Awesome. So Rick Curcio there, I tell you, such a interesting character. And I know we probably only scratched the surface with stories. So as we were going through the podcast here, I kind of thought of an idea. Maybe we'll do it. Maybe we'll not. But you just have to stay tuned because you never know what's going to happen here on the Monster Truck Outlaws of the West podcast.
That's for sure. You had some internet issues, so I apologize for that on my part. But we're back. And honestly,
don't apologize. Don't do that. Nobody knows if they don't see Vincent. Gotta learn that, buddy.
Well, I gotta say, it was awesome hearing the stories from Rick. I mean, just so much he's accomplished. You know, behind the scenes, you hear a lot, and especially being around his brother Steve. I mean, they're a dynamic duo. Crazy one at that. I mean, there's lots of stories to tell, and definitely a great podcast. I don't think that's going to be the last time we're going to see of Rick. That's for sure.
We'll figure something out. But, you know, I'll tell you, we brought up a lot of his brother Steve. If you want to hear some more Curcio stories, check our archives. We did a podcast a number of months back with Steve, so you can check out all the fun action there. And I think about every single guest, or a good majority of the guests that commented here tonight, we've done podcasts with them. So if you haven't seen some of their episodes, just check out our archives. You can find them here on our Facebook page. Just go to that video tab, live podcast episodes. You can see our entire library from the old school to the new school. We go far and wide here on the West Coast. You can also catch our audio-only versions wherever you can find podcasts. I think we are on every single podcast platform at this point. And if we're not on one that you think we need to be on, send us a message. I'll make sure. I'll try my best. We'll get it on there. But we'll give you some of the highlights. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Audible, iHeartRadio, Pandora, Stitcher, Breaker. There's so many out there. So if you're on the road, you're at the gym, you're in the office, wherever, audio-only version, you can check out our podcast. That's where our full library is as well if you can't jump on here on Facebook Live every week.
Definitely.
What do you say? What do you say, Vincent? This is another podcast in the books?
Definitely another podcast in the books and one to remember.
Absolutely. I just want to thank again real quick Rick for coming on board, and make sure you guys are sharing this podcast episode wherever you need to share it. Make sure people, if they weren't able to catch it live, make sure they catch the replay and they can enjoy the same stories that we did here live. We're not slowing down. Say it every week. Next week, we'll be back here with another episode, another great story to tell. You just never know who might pop up here on the podcast next. So make sure you stay tuned to our Facebook page and our Instagram page for dropping some teasers and some announcements for what's to come here on the Monster Truck Outlaws of the West podcast. Hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving. And as we enter the holiday season, make sure everybody stays safe and enjoys themselves. And we'll see you here next week for another podcast episode.